Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
Support for LAist comes from Visual Communications, presenting VC Film Fest, celebrating 40 years of Asian and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander filmmaking, with over 200 films May 1st through 10th. Info at festival.vcmedia.org.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So glad to have you with us today. Coming up later this hour, a thought experiment with University of Maryland law professor Maxwell L. Stearns. His book, Parliamentary America, The Least Radical Means of Radically Repairing Our Broken Democracy. I'm looking forward to our conversation with him. But we lead off with the future of Los Padrinos Juvenile Hall, the facility in Downey that has been embattled and so many concerned about the incarcerated youths there, about probation officers there, and the understaffing at that juvenile hall. Joining us, Robert Garova, LAist mental health reporter, has been closely following the saga at Los Padrinos. Robert, good to have you with us again. We appreciate it. So for those who have not been closely following this story, what's the backstory to this state board making this determination?
Yeah, so last week they made essentially a determination to leave Los Padrinos open. The backstory to that was, probation department was coming up on a 60-day deadline that they had to move about 300, youths out of Los Padrinos because they had previously found them what's called unsuitable to continue holding youths there. Narrowly in the nick of time, some would say, the probation department showed that they had met bare minimum staffing levels, done some improvements as far as use of force training, safety checks, and things like that. So the state board said that they could continue holding those kids there.
What were some of the use of force complaints about what personnel there had done with the incarcerated youths?
Well, it's interesting to point out that last week, I think it was the same day that we got the vote from the state board to allow Los Padrinos to stay open. LA Times, got a hold of some video that shows a number of probation employees seemingly standing by as a 17-year-old there was beat up on by some other youths in the facility. So that's a big one. That's sort of still being pending. There's some lawsuits there. There are some other issues as well, but I think that's the biggest one that's in everyone's mind right now. And it wasn't at Los Padrinos, but a year ago, 18-year-old Brian Diaz died of apparent drug overdose at a facility in Sylmar. If you want to go back the saga back then, there was folks, kids were moved out of that facility going back a year or so now. So a lot of back and forth, kids moving around, and now still problems at this facility here in Downey.
We're talking about Los Padrinos Juvenile Hall there. Also with us, Jonathan Bird, who's second VP and chief steward for the LA County Deputy Probation Officers Union. Jonathan, thank you for being with us. Your thoughts about the state allowing Los Padrinos to stay open?
Well, thank you, Larry, for the invitation, first of all. And on behalf of the probation officers, the rank and file, we simply like to say that we appreciate the BSCC understanding the situation that has occurred from years of neglect in terms of hiring, and therefore it has led to a critical staffing shortage. Our field operations and field officers have dedicated themselves to come and assist until LA County get the staffing numbers up so that we can run the programs in the proper manner. So we know that we are capable of doing the job. We've been doing the job for many years. We've been successful, but through some of the systematic operations from high as the Board of Supervisors, it has caused us to not have the workforce that is needed to make sure that things are run properly. That seems to be turning around. Seems that we are starting to get things in place. And as we proceed further with the oversight of the BSCC, we're sure that we'll be able to manage these operations that will be necessary to keep the youth safe and the employees safe, and also be able to habilitate them to a level that they can return to the community in a more effective manner.
We're talking with Jonathan Bird, a leader of the L.A. County Deputy Probation Officers Union. Robert Garova, so he's mentioning the continuing oversight of this Board of State and Community Corrections, the BSCC. Do they have other conditions that are being applied to Los Padrinos going forward, corrective actions that they need to take?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that was still left sort of pending was that there had been improvement on getting folks up to date on use of force training, but that, you know, remained to be seen. You know, I should mention that the board was very cautious, and there was a lot of back and forth in their vote to allow it to stay open. It was 6 yeses to 3 noes, you know, there was the caveat that they were going to continue to have ongoing, unannounced, I think monthly inspections of Los Padrinos. So, you know, I think the chair pointed out, you know, that this was not come too lightly, and that there were still issues that were going to need to be worked out.
All right. We're talking with Robert Garova, LAist mental health reporter. Also with us is Melinda Kakani, Youth Justice Director for the Children's Defense Fund, California. She's also a commissioner for the LA County Probation Oversight Commission. Millie, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So what are your ongoing concerns about the operations at Los Padrinos?
I mean, probably too many to list, but I want to start by saying that this didn't start in August of last year when Los Padrinos first reopened, right? In 2021, our juvenile halls were out of compliance with these minimum standards set forth by the BSCC for 321 days. In 2022, it was 206 days. In 2023, 353 days, right? And minimum standards aren't just, did you sign in? Did you sign out? Did you complete this log? Right. These standards cover how often rooms are checked, how often grievance processes are double checked, whether they're adequate, how we treat young people after we spray them with chemical agents, which California still allows and LA continues to do. Right. So the failure to meet minimum standards has meant that young people are urinating in empty milk cartons in the corners of their cells. Right. It means that days can go by where young people don't get to leave their carceral facilities, not just like, obviously not leave outside of the barbed wire, but not even leave like their day rooms and their cells. So the consequences that we're dealing with are far more, again, than just checklists. And I know that Mr. Bird talks about it being just a staffing issue, but it is far more than a staffing issue. It's a cultural issue, right? When in that video released by the LA Times, when a dozen kids are beating up one young person while staff, and this is a fully staffed unit, right? There's like 5 or 6 staff standing around. This is not a short staffed unit, high-fiving each other and laughing as a young person falls to the ground and ends up with a broken nose and a concussion. I mean, this is not a staffing issue. We have one of the lowest juvenile incarcerated youth populations we've ever had. And so the fact of the matter is that you can't pay folks enough to come into these facilities, and that the staff that we do have are calling out because they don't want to go in. So I think, you know, the fixes that the probation department has made, they're wildly temporary. We're calling people from the field who've spent decades only working with adults who've never even like stepped foot in juvenile facilities. And we're asking them to make these places safe and rehabilitative for young people. I mean, it's really a farce. And so I think my biggest concern really is that young people continue to pay the price for this failed experiment that the county spends $435 million on. That's not chump change.
Let me just ask you about the population of the youths that are incarcerated at Los Padrinos and elsewhere. You mentioned that the population is down considerably, and my understanding is this is in part because you've got the ones who have been convicted of the most serious offenses or sentenced in juvenile court because of the most serious offenses, where in the past maybe it was a wider range of young people who were incarcerated. And so how has that changed in your view, how the young people there are considered by staff? And just the nature of the threats either to or carried out by the young people, because these are those who have been accused of some of the worst crimes.
I mean, I think that's a really flawed narrative, Larry. I think we've heard probation officers call into many public meetings talking about how these kids are monsters, how they're youthful, they're offenders who've done the most egregious things, and perhaps they have done egregious things, right? But at the core, they are still children, right? So we can carry on this narrative that they're violent, that they're aggressive, that they're dangerous, and that they deserve to be locked up. But that's not going to solve anything. That hasn't made our streets safer, right?
But that's a separate, hold that thought, because that's kind of a separate issue, because you've got the meta issue of what's the best public policy, how do we rehabilitate young people, the other issue is how do you keep the kids safe and the people that work there safe? And so that's kind of where my question is coming from. If you've got younger people that are on average have more of a background of violence that are there, and that's a higher concentration, how do you deal with that?
Go ahead, sorry. I mean, first of all, I think that when we characterize these young people as dangerous, that's problematic, right? Because when we start talking about them that way, then we treat them like they deserve to be caged and like they're animals, which is currently what's happening. But the fact of the matter remains is that they don't get regular mental health services. They don't get fresh air on a regular basis. They don't consistently get education in a classroom. The young folks who are supposed to be receiving college-level education have college courses maybe once a week for a couple hours, and the rest of the time they're just sitting around. So I think the bigger issue is that we have a bunch of bored kids who have maybe done terrible, horrible things. But at the end of the day, they are bored, and much of their violence, much of their aggression, much of their frustration stems from the fact that they don't have enough staff, they don't have enough people who know how to work with them, right? Like, I mean, there are programs out there like the Credible Messengers who are going in and who are connecting with young people in a very different way and who have very different relationships with these young people. You don't hear about those Credible Messengers talking about the fact that these kids are violent. You hear those Credible Messengers talking about the fact that they've actually built relationships with these young people. You have teaching artists who go in, who talk about the fact that they actually know these young folks. They feel safe with these young folks. They can talk to these young folks. They know how to de-escalate situations, right? But like, when we create a situation where young people are constantly being dysregulated and do nothing to stop that, then they're going to act out, and then our instinct is to blame it on whatever they've been, accused of doing. Mind you, all of the young folks in LP, they're pre-adjudication or pre-dispo, meaning they haven't even been convicted of anything. So innocent until proven guilty has got to mean something.
We're talking with Melinda Kakani, who's Youth Justice Director for the Children's Defense Fund California, also a member of the LA County Probation Oversight Commission. Jonathan Bird, Second VP, Chief Steward for LA County Deputy Probation Officers Union. Sir, your response to what Ms. Kakani is saying about the way that the young people in Los Padrinos are being thought of by the people that work there.
Thank you, Larry. And thank Ms. Kakani for her oversight and for her energy that she supplies to making sure that youth in LA County are treated fairly and equitably. Again, I will go back, Larry, and say that a lot of things that are happening currently are the result of neglect from a higher level source, such as the Board of Supervisors and management. The critical staffing is important to succeed in any program. I'll give you a for instance. For instance, 10 years ago, the rank and file had 4,400 workers for LA probation. Today, we have less than 2,400. Now, we have reduced camps and we have reduced certain facilities, but the number of reduction through attrition has not been kept up to by the hiring process, because we have had a hiring freeze for probably 8 to 10 years until this current year, where this current board has seen the need to allow the chief to hire the workforce. We will agree that field officers do not specialize in dealing with juveniles. That is a special talent that takes some time, a special training. And therefore, a lot of times when you have in the facility currently, you have those who have come to assist to work with juveniles because of the shortage problems. All of the fundamental programs, the mental health, the being locked in the rooms. This union has advocated with the Board of Supervisors that our infrastructure leads to some of this problems that we have. For instance, Ms. Kakani spoke about someone urinating in a milk carton. Well, if you look at the infrastructure that we have and the buildings that we use to house these youth, they are antiquated. Most of them are over 50 years old, and therefore they don't have the restroom amenities inside of the rooms. We've been advocating for funding. We've even gone to the state to ask for funding to rebuild the infrastructure so that it does not look like a prison, does not look like they're incarcerated. It's more like a place where you would come because you, whatever trouble you got in, they are to provide you services, and the environment and the aesthetics also should look like that so that you have a learning environment. So we will agree on certain things, but in terms of the professionalism of the probation officers, there's no probation officers that are afraid to work in the institution. I think some of the communication has been misguided. When we talk about being unsafe, we're talking about accountability, not necessarily that we are afraid. We are called to do this job. Most of the people in the probation department come right out of the community. I always say sometimes facetiously that the largest community-based organization in Los Angeles County is the probation department, because the community who are dedicated to working with youth, they come from us. They are part of us. And so when we receive these youth, we receive them with the desire to rehabilitate them. I don't say rehabilitate because some of them come from deprived areas, poverty, and that needs to be addressed by the Board of Supervisors and those who clearly want social reforms. The workers that we represent are professional. They are not afraid.
Okay.
They are not saying that we are not going to work because it's unsafe. Sometimes when we're talking about people not going to work because of the critical shortage, some people are working 16 to 24 hours straight, and the next day they can't show up because they are entirely exhausted. So there's many conversations to be had. What I will say lastly is that we are proud that we finally have a Board of Supervisors that are investing in youth, and any programs, any social reforms, any reimagines that we need can be done through the probation department as a lead, because we deal with community-based organizations. We invite them in. We help them.
I need to break, sir. I'm so sorry, but we'll continue with our guests more on this topic in just a moment on Air Talk. It's Air Talk on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle with our LAist mental health reporter, Robert Garova, who's been closely following Los Padrinos Juvenile Hall in Downey and the concerns there about the incarcerated youths at that facility, as well as large number of staff call-outs, leaving the facility shorthanded. It also has had, in recent years, a shortage of staff to work at the facility. Robert, I wonder if you can talk just a little bit about to what extent there is a staff shortage and to what extent probation officers have called out.
Well, the Office of Inspector General put out a report. This was last month that looked at an incident from last December where there was a brief escape at the facility at Los Padrinos. And they looked at staffing issues on that day. And they're supposed to have 100 staff show up. I believe it was 60 called out that day for different reasons. But, you know, when you're supposed to have 100 people show up for work, 60 do not. I think it was 40 called in and said that, you know, I'm not going to be in today. The other 20 just didn't show up. That's a pretty big deal. And a number of people at the state board and elsewhere, activists have pointed to that as a huge issue. I don't have the entire numbers of what they're looking at. Maybe our other guests can fill us in on that, but, that's considerable. And, you know, just as recently as the last couple of weeks, Guillermo Villarosa, the chair, probation chief, has, you know, said that he is continuing to try to pull people out from the field, and they're doing all they can to hire. So it's a continuing issue for the department.
Jonathan Bird of the union, just real briefly, why would probation officers not even bother to call in if they're not coming to work?
Larry, I think that's a systematic problem. We have a new call-out system, and a lot of the officers from the field unit are not familiar with how to access that system in an efficient manner. Most of our people know how to follow the procedures. They do it, and I believe if you speak to the department now, through the proper training, they are responding accordingly. Okay. And most of them are returning back to work.
Red in Sylmar, good to have you with us on Air Talk. Please share your thoughts about this.
Yeah, I wanted to call in for asking and demanding LA County to close Los Perdidos and Barry J. Nydorf, to declare a state of emergency and to free those youth incarcerated.
To just free them, not send them to another facility?
No, so we actually, as like community organizations, I'm also part of Theatrucha's Central Cultural and Bookstore in Sylmar, and we've actually worked with many and plenty of organizations to create this program called Youth Justice Reimagined, and that will create a lot of family support centers, community culture centers, with the money that they spend on prison, which is actually $800,000 per youth per year. We can use that money to support these centers and support the kids when they come home so that they have more resources. A lot of the kids that are incarcerated, you know, deal with family issues. Some kids don't have family. They're in the foster care system. So we want to address those and address the root of the problem instead of incarcerating the kids.
Red, let me just ask you, how do you deal with, if you have a youth who is suspected or been found guilty of committing a violent rape, of aggravated assault, of very serious crimes, how do you protect others who might be targeted by that individual if their movement is free and if they're not incarcerated?
Right. Well, kids, like most of the times as kids like commit crimes, they have that influences around them and they don't make the greatest choices for themselves and for others. So we want to support them and let them know that they don't have to make these choices anymore, that they don't have to like go down this line of where they're committing more harm onto others and not to themselves.
Sure, but rehabilitation, changing that mindset and rehabilitation, isn't that a fairly lengthy process? So what do you do in the interim period before they're able to deal with impulse control and all the deficiencies from their childhoods that you're talking about, all the things that have made their lives so traumatic and difficult? What do you do in the interim?
Right, and that's what I'm telling you, man. Like, you got to show these kids love. Like, a lot of the kids, you know, that have gone on the run, that have, like, joined into gang violence, like, they haven't been loved. They don't know what that is. So, like, once you show that to them for the very first time, instead of, like, incarcerating them, like, you know, we were hearing on the Board of Supervisors call, like, public comment from probation that, like, probation officer was getting, like, spit on their face from the youth. And it's like, you're incarcerating children. You're trapping them in a cage. So it's like, you know, what are you going to do if you're getting put into a cage? So it's really important. It's not something that, like, you know, that we've ever even, like, tried before because we're scared of these kids. And, you know, we call them monsters. We call them, like, dangerous. But, you know, I committed a felony myself, and I had a lot of shame in that. But from there, I realized, like, I can do better. And, you know, I have people that support me and some people that don't, you know, in the community. Some people are still scared of you and whatnot. But, you know, it's important to realize that there's people in your corner that you can look to for resources, for support, for growth, and to learn in better ways.
Red, I appreciate you calling in, and thank you also for talking about the program that you have for youth to help them through this process. We really appreciate it. Let me go back to Robert Garova, who's LAist mental health reporter. Where do we stand overall in juvenile facilities in the county, and are there other facilities that are still found to be deficient?
Well, yes. So there's, you know, there's about 300 kids left at Los Padrinos, although that changes, but about 300. The board was also looking at what's called the Barry J. Neindorf Secure Youth Treatment Facility, which has about 50 young people left in it up in Sylmar. That was also found to be unsuitable, and they were, you know, at risk of having to move kids out of that facility as well. But they, you know, met the minimum requirements, it's my understanding, as well, and you know, they won't have to be moved out of there. There's also a number of camps, you know, but you know, there have been issues at camps as well. We haven't brought this up yet. There was a probation employee that was charged with having sex with an inmate, is what they call it. You know, so there are a number of other facilities as well. Los Padrinos is the one with the most kids in it at the moment.
We have Misty and Duarte, who emailed. Guests bring up a great point about not just the number of staff, but the training. I'm a nurse. I work in various psychiatric and special needs environments. All of the facilities are staffed primarily with minimum wage workers with no training on dealing with the population they encounter. It's bizarre to have a few nurses and social workers on hand that go to school for years to learn how we should be operating, just to watch the majority of staff that have the most face time with patients doing the exact opposite, and often escalating conflict. Efforts to implement training are met with a lot of resistance, since for many of the low-paid staff, this is just another job for them, not a career track. Jonathan Bird of the L.A. County Deputy Probation Officers Union, you want to respond to Misty's email?
I'm sorry, Larry, could you repeat just that last portion?
Yeah, she said efforts to implement training are met with a lot of resistance, since for many of the low-paid staff, this is just another job for them, not a career track.
I will respond to that again, that we advocate for professionalism in our rank and file. I don't clearly understand the low pay per se. We do believe that we are underpaid for the work that we do. But that's a different topic. The real issue is that the people that work in this probation department in rank and file, we have up to doctorate degrees that are working in these institutions. So they are well educated. They have dedicated their lives to performing services that habilitate youth. So I'm not clear as to how that applies to her email.
And you're not, and the jobs are probation officers paid minimum wage? I didn't think they were paid minimum
wage. No, so that's why I'm confused.
Yeah,
minimum wage person, so I wanted to get clarity on the email, but I would just stipulate that we have a educational requirement for most of our officers that is the highest in this country when it comes to dealing with youth. We dedicate our lives, our training come from our education and also from the training from California standards and also from the directives in our own probation department policies. So we are always interested in learning more. We have MSWs that are in certain institutions that deal with the youth. And so we welcome those, just like we welcome the CBOs. And I think we would do ourselves an advantage if we would work collaboratively rather than trying to be somewhat divisive and ousting in one entity from another.
Jonathan Bird, thank you very much. One of the leaders of the L.A. County Deputy Probation Officers Unions. My thanks to Melinda Kakani, a member of the L.A. County Probation Oversight Commission, Youth Justice Director for the Children's Defense Fund, California. And my thanks to L.A.'s mental health reporter, Robert Garova. You can read his continuing coverage about juvenile facilities in Los Angeles County at LAist.com. Robert, thank you so much. Good to have you with us again.
Thanks,
it's Air Talk on LAist 89.3. Coming up, we'll talk with University of Maryland law professor Maxwell L. Stearns. His new book, Parliamentary America, The Least Radical Means of Radically Repairing Our Broken Democracy. We'll be back in just 90 seconds.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local, fact-based journalism. one lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at laist.com/sweeps.